Good morning, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. For the next 2 hours, you're stuck with me. If you have a car question, now is the time to get in because it's kind of slow at the front side of the show. 602-508-0960. And if you're outside the Phoenix metropolitan area and you're still hearing the show, you can use our toll-free line. 888-960-9696. 888, we're on 960 AM. 888-960-9696. So, one way or another, but let me tell you about a really great shop here in the Phoenix area. It's Larry Harker's Auto, 38th Avenue and Indian School. They're really good at what they do. They've probably got 50, 60 years of experience at the shop. That means they got guys that started with 50 Chevys, maybe even 49s, and then they worked all the way through computer cars with brains that tell the engine to do everything. Larry Harker's can fix things that most people can't, because I'll get people in that neighborhood that have a problem with a car, and I recognize the symptoms, need somebody who's seen that before, and I haven't. Send them to Harker's, and it's fixed. So, and he does oil changes and all that other stuff. So if you want a good shop and you're near 38th Avenue and Indian School and you don't have a good shop already, then use Harker's for an oil change and see what happens. Sitting next to me is Wayne Shack. Wayne Shack just got out of jail day before yesterday.
Well, thank you for explaining everything in details. Do you want to go on the background of that or not?
No. They know I'm teasing.
I know.
Why don't you tell us what you do for a living?
I'm a parts guy. This is plain and simple. I have worked for 41 years in the automotive aftermarket, looking for products for shops, repair shops like Mark's. And we've known each other for many, many, many years. I am currently a director of products, so I work for a large automotive associated group, and I'll explain that a little more. But I have done this now. It's been 41 years I've been in the business, and my job is product development, and I also am a product director. So my job is to look for the deals for our members of long-term associations and qualify products that they're buying.
Okay. But you say aftermarket, which is we'll make that – we'll draw that line. You've got aftermarket and –
And OEM experience.
OEM, well,
yeah.
So original equipment manufacturer.
Correct.
So Chevy, Ford, Chrysler, Honda, Toyota. So you've got that segment and those parts, and then you've got my segment, which is aftermarket, and my parts.
Correct.
Okay.
Because there's crossover in there.
All right. Parts. But when you talk about that you're aftermarket, really and truly you're tracking parts backwards to where they're made, wherever they're made. And you kind of know how those parts come out, and they're only going to go one in two directions, one of two, aftermarket or manufacturers, yes?
Yeah, in some cases, they're much the same.
Okay.
The same manufacturers do the same, make the same products.
Give me an example.
Exactly. I can tell you on, for example, on a remanufactured starter or alternator, just as an example, the big three or the Asian cars or Korean or whatever, they use, for remanufactured product, they're using some of the same manufacturers who make the same type of products that you would buy when you go down the street from a local parts store or online or such in a remanufactured case.
We're just talking remanufactured electrical, like starters and alternators.
Correct.
And so when we talk about the aftermarket, we're talking about the three big dogs. We're talking about AutoZone, O'Reilly's, and who's the third one?
AutoZone, O'Reilly, Advance,
okay.
Pep. Pet Boys.
Okay. Yeah. Those are the aftermarket guys,
NAPA.
But I buy from a parts warehouse and install aftermarket parts on people's cars.
Correct.
So we just get the terminology right. I buy some OEM because I can't get that in the aftermarket. For instance, something very proprietary like the glove box door. I get it from the dealer. So the five, Chevy, Ford, Dodge, Toyota, Honda. Those are the big dogs. They're double digit on the road.
Correct.
So when you track this part backwards, and let's do this rotating electrical. Let's do starters and alternators. Where is the company that builds them for both of us? What part of the world?
U.S.
Okay.
USA.
So they're made in the United States,
right.
And they're disseminated in two different boxes. Hypothetically, one of them could say, give me an aftermarket name.
It could be BBB, or okay. It could be a brand box from a chain store.
Okay, like Pep Boys.
Pep
it could
Boys
be.
Or an NAPA or whomever it may be.
And that same starter alternator can be in a box that says Chevrolet, Ford, Chrysler, Toyota, Honda.
AC Delco, Motorcraft.
Okay. Okay. And you know that because you've gone all the way to the beginning of the chain, and your job is for the people that you work with and for. With and for. Those are two. Those people are interested in, can I buy this part and jump over people? Can I buy this part cheaper? What's the best part out there? And if this bag of, or this oil, and I'm using this, I'm not going to use oil, this windshield wiper motor is good, can I do better, cheaper? How did I do?
That's gross. I would think that's correct. That's okay. About as good as it's going to get.
And so, when you do you travel all over the world?
I do.
Give me some countries.
I've extensively traveled to China, Korea, Taiwan, Japan, Mexico, Canada. So, it, you know, wherever that part is being manufactured at.
And so you track it back to its origination point, then you know it's put in a box, what the box says, and how it gets here.
Correct.
Okay, now let's talk about how it gets here, because I'm always intrigued by that. So the guy makes it, and start from there. Where does it go? Where does it go? Where does it go?
Well, first of all, somebody has to request it being made.
Okay.
Okay. And typically, that world is a lot smaller than a lot of people realize. There are manufacturers of certain types of products that are out there that, for the most part, if you are already in the business, say that you're already doing distribution, or you are a brand and you're looking for a part or a category, you probably already have a sense of who's manufacturing those goods. You do the research, you go out. So that bill of material was created, what the requirements are behind it, the model of distribution, the MOQ, how much they're going to order, all of those things are negotiated up front.
Okay.
Orders are placed.
Okay.
Depending on how they receive freight, whether it's containered products, whether it's consolidated into a marketplace, because some big companies, large companies do that. They consolidate huge amounts of products and bring them all through a shipping company and then freight forwarder from the USA to the destination or where it goes to, which could be a large warehouse distributor. It could be even as small sometimes as even local parts distributors, depending on what their needs are.
A local parts. Again, we have the O'Reilly's and those kinds of, we have Big A's, and we have a lot of other companies that fall into that category, because I buy from warehouses that don't sell to the public. So I buy from Factory Motor Parts, I buy from Parts Authority, I buy from Worldpack.
Correct.
And those guys are likely to sell me the same part that exists in another box with another label.
Absolutely.
The same part.
Absolutely.
And there's going to be a price difference, because one of them maybe came up from Mexico, and so it's a shorter trip on a boat or whatever. And so when it gets here, it's going to be cheaper than the one from China.
Very well could be. And a lot of that is, there's things that play into this. Most times it's simple. It's labor costs and it's weight and freight.
Okay.
And that's just the way it is. I can talk
distance
about
distance too.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Distance
too. So, friend, before we take a break, that air gun that you just heard in your ear?
Yeah.
That's a caller. So we're going to take a caller first and see what's going on. Who might that be, Gil?
That would be Mike.
Mike, good morning. How can we help you?
Hey. Oh, good. Hey, thanks for taking my call. My son's got a 95 Ford 150, and just all of a sudden, he's got two gas tanks, and the rear is just spilling out gas. So that's probably the front tank pump.
Well, it depends on how it's plumbed. Your 95, of course, is 25 years old, and I'm not familiar with exactly the way it is, but this is how it happens. There's a switch, and this switch, when you flip front tank, it shuts off the back tank. And it sends fluid forward. If the switch goes bad, then maybe tank one will send fuel into tank two, and tank two is already filled. So then all of a sudden it comes out to either the vent underneath the tank, on top of the tank, or it's going to come out where you filled it up in the filler neck. So
that's where it's coming out. So it might just be the switch.
And certainly that's what you would want to do, is go. Now, from a diagnostic point of view, you have to make sure that you're not underneath this truck and your wife's mad at you. You have to make sure that if you're underneath this truck, you don't have a trouble light that's going to hit the ground, explode, and catch the whole truck on fire plus your house. So be careful with this. But you can go down and find the switch, and you can turn on the front tank, and then you can pinch the back tank's line or put your hand on it, and you might be able to feel that the gas is going forward and backward. But if you pinch off the line and it quits coming out of the fuel tank on number two, then you know that it's going forward and backwards. The switch is the only thing that can do it. It's really a solenoid. It's not really a switch. The switch is on your dash that you pick tank one and tank two. But the solenoid, is that what you're going to call it?
Yeah.
A solenoid that's going to either go front tank or back tank, and there's no neutral position. But some reason or another, you've got yours that's stuck.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. And the other thing real quick, my older Ranger that I have, I've done the lower ball joints, the upper control arms, new shocks. If something's still kind of rattling, I've taken in several times. They can't find anything. I just like to go off-road, but I want to be safe. So I'm like, who do you recommend? I'm near like the 101 in Indian Bend.
Okay. Well, let me ask you a couple questions. Can you make this happen?
Oh, it's always there. It's just like a little subtle rattle.
Okay.
In the front end somewhere, right?
All right.
I'm like, I don't know. What the heck is
that? All right. Okay. Well, here, I want you to do some more. I want you to drive straight and listen to the noise, and then I want your wife to drive and you to move to the passenger side and answer the question, can you tell which side it's on by sitting on the driver's and the passenger? Number one. Number two, if you make a gradual turn to the right, like you're getting on and off the 101, does it make any, does it change the rattle any? So you say, well, you know, I made a, make a right turn at 90 degree and the rattle goes away, but when I make a left turn, it doesn't go away. On a 1 to 10 scale, this is a 3 or a 4. So Indian Bend and the 101. If you go south, then Craig Bell at Bell Automotive at the 101 in McDowell, just west, he's an old gray-haired guy. And I am saying that there's 99.9% chance Greg can find this if you can duplicate it. But if you show up there and you can't make it happen, no one can find it. But go to Bell Automotive, and that's at McDowell Road, just west of the 101. And don't go on Monday morning or Friday afternoon, because those are busy times. But yeah, just go to see him, okay?
Okay, thank you so much.
You bet. To a TOT, you know what TOT stands for? Turned over to Bell Automotive. Okay, phone number is 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. We're going to take a break, and then we're going to come back with Wayne Shack and talk about where auto parts start and how they end up in your car. Well, it's 21 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. Wayne Shack, who goes back and finds out where the part is made and then follows it all the way through the chain, even to your car. He sits behind this little computer screen in the very dark of night in China, and he looks at the sales records of every auto parts warehouse in the world, and he decides how many parts are being sold, and then he goes back and finds the part, and then he tells everybody, I found the guy that makes everybody's motor mounts, and I can get you onto him, and then you work out your own deal. Now, that's a simplification.
I would say so.
Okay. Okay. And I can't possibly describe it all, but we got some callers. Harry, good morning to you.
Hey, how you doing, Mark?
I'm good.
Glad you got a parts guy on here. I got a couple questions.
Okay.
What is the difference, if there is, between remanufactured and rebuilt? And if there is, which one is generally better?
That's a good question.
You know, it depends on how much is actually done. And that conversation, it's a good question. It's come up over the years. Remanufactured in the past always meant that as a rotating electrical piece, all components were replaced. Everything, but bearings were replaced.
Brushes.
Stator was completely finished off. Essentially, when you were done, what you were left with was a shell, which was the casing, which reality is that doesn't go bad, so you're just reusing it again, but everything is essentially brand new.
All the consumables are brand new.
Yeah. And rebuilt, for example, in a fuel injector, they would do the same thing, except you can't replace certain components internally inside of it. Was it tested? Was it qualified? Was it cleaned? Is it flowing properly? That can be considered to be rebuilt.
And I think, you correct me if I'm wrong, I think rebuilt means we went in and fixed the problem that you had, and we might have on our way in replaced the nose bushing on your starter.
Yeah, right.
And but remanufactured is all the consumable stuff, all the stuff that breaks, all the stuff that spins, all the stuff that wears is reman.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, Harry?
Exactly. That's a great question, though.
Okay, yeah, okay, yeah, I got a little follow-up to that. What generally, you kind of see rebuild more than you remanufactured. And how do you go about looking for the remanufactured part? I mean, you know, other than just asking directly, because, you know, a lot of times the boxes don't, you know, don't really say sometimes.
And the shop can't tell you either, so
yeah,
that's the hard question.
You're right, and you will find it predominantly rebuilt on, for example, we call rotating electrical starters and alternators. I pick on that one because it's an easier one to do normally as a rule. Unless it was somebody locally who cleaned something up and put it back together and it functions and works, it's rebuilt. Or is it completely remanufactured? Because that seems to be the industry standard. When you're talking about electrical component, you know, I'm trying to think of one here, but there may be something where they can solder connectors back together mm-hmm. and do something that typically goes wrong. It's
springs
rebuilt.
Behind the brushes.
Right, exactly, something like that. You're right. And the only thing I can say on that is it's all about research and, you know, whether we... Mark likes to hear that word or not, but you know what? We have a tool today at our disposal called the internet, and you know, there's a lot of information that's out there on brands. It really is. You can go into a brand and you can typically find enough information on the background now of what, who the company is and what brand it is and what they're doing.
But it's going to be a price, don't you think? There's going to be a big price difference. There is going to be a price difference between the rebuilt and the remanufactured.
That's true.
Okay.
That's true.
And, Harry, I don't know how much you're going to see at the tail end of that because it depends on the shop. They may not know the difference, but they called, and the guy said it's a reman, and they didn't pay attention to that. They actually got a rebuilt. In a lot of their minds, that's going to be the same, but you're going to get charged the higher price for the lower quality. But typically the warranty takes care of that anyway.
Right. Right. And that doesn't always mean that it's a bad product, by the way. That doesn't necessarily mean that. That doesn't imply that it's that the quality is bad, because that may, from a rebuild perspective, that might that the only thing that it really needs.
And you're right. And if I'm going to give you a year warranty, I'm saying, you know, if the brushes go bad or if something else happens, I'm still going to warranty the entire alternator.
Right.
I'm going to still. So, Harry, you can stop buying those used tires because the new ones are a little better.
I like recaps thoroughly.
Now you're going back.
Hey, well, it's a good question, I think, to ask when you get anything done at the shop. Is it rebuilt or remanufactured, or is it, you know,
I'm going to say
new or whatever.
80% of the shop owners I know, including my own staff, is going to struggle with that question. We're going to struggle because we just don't know. It comes in a box. It's a box we've sold many, many times.
And it's terms that we've used in an industry over the years, and it's kind of gotten watered down. But generally, that's always been the situation.
Well, what you said, though, that I paid attention to is you say virtually everything today is remanufactured. So there's not a lot of rebuilders. And you said locally, and I agree with you.
Yep.
There's local guys here that will rebuild starters and alternators. But I think most everything in a box that we install, and Harry, your shop, Kurtz installs, is going to be remanufactured. And it's going to be representative of the warranty, too. So, Harry, good luck. Man. Thank you very much for your call. Thank you. Arnie, we're going to take you over two times. We're going to go now, and then we're going to, if we don't finish, we'll get you on the other side of the break. But go ahead with your question.
Okay, well, I got two. So, and this is a great segue into what you just were talking about. I have a 1990 Lincoln Mark 7. I need a brake booster, which was unique to that car. And the shops, the dealer, nobody can find one. I can't find a rebuilt or a remanufactured.
Oh, you know,
got a parts guy on there.
I'm going to jump in before Wayne gets this. We hear that all the time. And some guy was looking for a 32-gallon Dodge fuel tank the other day. Here's the key. You got to find the OEM number, and then you can cross that baby over to do a bunch more. So it's just that nobody wants to take the time.
Amen.
And to find it.
Absolutely.
Because it's out there. I could build your entire car bumper to bumper with parts that we have today. So.
Well, I will tell you, and that one is another good question that, again, I defer back to an internet. you do have the ability to look. There are companies out there, Cardone is one of them, that you have the ability to send that off. It's not cheap, but you could send it back. There's other couple in California that come to my mind. I can't remember the names right now, but they're out there.
I want you to stick with Cardone because you and I have had danced with Cardone for years.
Absolutely.
And we know that those are the guys that are going to be around 20 years from now. So Cardone, 1-800, go Cardone and ask them, A, do you have a remanufactured one? I can send you the old one and you send me the new one. They may not want to deal with you. They may want to deal with a shop and you can turn them on to the shop.
That's okay.
Yeah.
That's okay as long as we can find one.
I can tell you right now, unequivocally, that's available. I'm telling you, okay. It's guaranteed. It's just somebody didn't want to put in. We found a water pump for a Rolls Royce the other day.
Right.
And that makes a big difference. So I know you had a second question, Arnie, but I'm going to hold you off until about 3 or 4 minutes from now. Okay, so I'm going to put you on hold. Anybody else? We have four lines available, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. We're talking about automotive parts from inception, from birth until they go onto your car. Does the name mean anything? Can we have the same part in 10 different boxes? Is there a difference? How many people make motor mounts in the world? How many different people make a variety of parts or as opposed to just one part? When we talk about this aftermarket versus OEM, is there really a big deal? Is there a big difference between a starter in a Delco box with a GM label on it and something that we get from O'Reilly's or the Zone or something like that? So those are all the kind of questions that we can get. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960.
About that
34 minutes at the hour o'clock, 10 o'clock. Mark Salem with Wayne Shack. Wayne tracks parts all the way back to where they were born. But let me tell you about somebody who installs the parts that Wayne finds. Action Auto Supply, or Action Auto Repair. I-17 in Deer Valley. I've known Tom since 1983. I know he's honest. I know he's dependable. I know he knows right from wrong. I know he has your best interest in front of his own. And he makes sure, like all of us, or like many of us, that our technicians and our staff, you know, falls in line with that. So if you're anywhere near I-17 in Deer Valley, northwest corner, Action Auto Repair, it's a good shop to have your oil change done and stuff like that. We're going to go back to Arnie. Arnie, you had a second question.
I did. I have a 1995 Jaguar XJS convertible in very good shape, except for a couple of shallow dents in my hood and my fender. I'm looking for somebody who could do paintless dent repair and really make it come out like new. I really would like a good job because the car's in such good shape.
Okay, all right. You got your pencil handy?
Yeah.
Okay, 480-5.
Okay.
598.
Hold on. Wait, 480.
598.
Okay, go on.
1234.
Oh.
And
480-598.
598-1234.
Yes,
ask for Alan.
Okay. Okay.
And we use dentless pavement repair guys, and there's some we don't use again. There's some that we use all the time. Alan knows who that is, and you call him, and you're gonna interview him just like everybody else. Okay. I got to run, Arnie.
Yeah.
Thank you very much, Ken. You're up next. How can we help you?
Good morning.
Hi.
I've got a '91 Ford Ranger. Rear wheel drive only. I think I have traction lock. There's a solenoid on the top of the differential. How does this thing actuate? When does this kick in?
I don't know. I really don't know. I'm thinking that it's possible that this may not be what you think it is. But if this is an electronic traction control where we're going to lock this two tires together on the rear end versus just one, it's nothing I've ever worked on before. So I think it might be something to do with the brake system. I think it might be something to do with looking at even pressure from side to side. But frankly, I don't know. But I can tell you what you do is you got a couple of options. You can go to the parts store and ask for an exploded picture of the differential on your Ranger. and then you point to it and say, what's that? And that would be an easy thing for you to do. You just need an exploded drawing of your back end of your Ranger on the differential. And then ask somebody. You can go into any parts store and probably get that answered. But you've asked me a question that I don't know the answer.
Okay. This came up because I was getting ready to drain, change the fluid. And when I took the check plug out, I saw a thin ring gear with external teeth on it. It looks like it lines up with this, I think, solenoid on the top.
Well, then now we're talking about an ABS speed sensor. The ABS speed sensor wants to know when the rear brakes lock up. So now we have a sensor on the top of the differential, and it tells it when as opposed to a wheel sensor on every wheel, we're just going to monitor the differential ring gear. And so that's that. Now I think that's what it is, and I think I'm 75% sure.
Okay, this thing does have rear anti-lock brakes.
Okay, well, that makes
sense.
That's
what that is.
Yeah, if you don't have an ABS light on, then there's nothing to do. Just leave it alone. Every once in a while, we have to pull them out, clean the metal fuzz off of them, and put them right back in. But that's kind of how it works. Ken, thank you very much. I get to get to Larry. Larry, good morning. How can we help you?
Hi, Mark. Good to talk to you again. Thanks for your help on my 81 El Camino in the past.
Okay, well, thank you. Thank you for that.
My son has a 2019 Dodge Ram 5.7 V8 with e-torque.
Okay.
Just over 15,000 miles on it. He's had a problem with it several times where he'll be driving it, and all of a sudden it starts running very rough. Engine light comes on. Says it hardly runs. By the time he gets it to the dealership, it's running fine. The engine light's off.
Okay. 1 minute.
Go ahead.
They have pulled up codes twice. They get two separate codes, but they're saying they can't fix it until it does it while they have it.
Well, I don't know about that, but let me just tell you real quick because we're up against the time break here and Gil's already yelling in my ear. The code doesn't mean the problem's there. The code means that system is squawking. So when you have an oxygen sensor code, more than half the time we don't replace the oxygen sensor because upstream it's running lean. The oxygen sensor's stuck on lean. The computer says, why don't I ever see Rich out of you? And the O2 sensor, I'm just the messenger, boss. So all of a sudden the computer goes, oh, oxygen sensor. Well, it's not. So the check engine light is yellow for a reason. That means caution. Doesn't mean stop. It's not red. For them to tell you that it has to be something that they have, here's the problem with that. 99% of the time we can diagnose this. However, if the code has gone away or the history has gone away, then the answer is yes. I need to see it the same day the light comes on. So that's kind of what happens. What are the codes that that it's setting? Do you know? Do you know what the focus is?
Yes. He told me the two codes they get are PO300 and PO308.
Do you know what the talk is or what those are called?
Yes. He told me that the 300 is multiple misfire.
Yeah.
And the 308 is a misfire on cylinder 8.
Okay. Multiple misfires can be cylinder 8 going ta-ta, da-da-da-da, da-da, that kind of stuff. So if I were working on a car, I'd take the coil on number 8 and move it to number 6, and I'd take the number 6 coil and go to number 8 and then see if the problem moved, and if the problem moved, then I'd replace the coil. I'd also do that with the spark plugs. This isn't going to cause him. If he starts smelling sulfur, you got to stop. You got to get it fixed.
Okay.
But really and truly, this ain't rocket science. This is something that a good shop would fix. Do you like your shop?
Well, see, he's in New Jersey. He's in the Air Force.
Yeah. Okay. So, all right. Here's how he finds a good shop, okay? He finds a good shop by contacting a couple of different auto parts stores. Go in and find the gray-haired guy there that's been working there 11 years. And you get up and snuggle up to him and you go, look it, I'm from out of town. My dad always said, go to the auto parts store because they know the guys that don't return parts, that don't try the part and return it. They pay their bills. They have the same technicians and they're really good at what they do. What's the name of that shop around here? And that's what you do.
Okay.
All righty. Good luck, Larry.
Okay.
Thank you very much. Al Todd, you stay right there. We'll be right back. Well, when it comes to shops in town, I really do have the best list at MarkSalem.com, but Auto Dynamics is Sun City's largest and most trusted source for complete automotive services. He's been around the block a long time, family owned and operated since 82. I know Chuck, who owns that facility, and I've known him since the 60s. And he's been around a long time. His son Derek actually runs Automotive Dynamics to make the repair shop. So they're not paid a commission. They're not paid a percentage of your repair bill. Therefore, they can ensure that you're not going to be sold unnecessary parts. Their Auto Dynamics is on the north side of Grand, just west of 99th Avenue. And let's go back. And did we finish up with Larry? I think we did.
He's gone.
Okay. And Al, you're up next. How can I help you?
Okay. Hi, Mark.
Hi.
I have a cargo van, Nissan NV200. We just got back from a trip to Idaho. Now, I noticed that it didn't matter whether we were going 30 miles an hour, 50 miles an hour, or 70 miles an hour on flat land. This thing has a continuously variable transmission.
Yes.
CVT. And it always, on flat land, was pulling 2,000 RPM. The question is, am I using just as much gas at 70 miles an hour as I am at 40 miles an hour?
It has everything to do with your RPM and the load. Everything to do with load and RPM. If your wife's got 12 cases of beer in the back of that cargo van, then you're not going to get the fuel economy that if she left her beer home. So the answer to your question is load and speed. So if you're going downhill, you can have all the load you want, and it's going to help your fuel economy. But you just came back from a long trip, and I think at the end of the day.
So the fact that it's going 2,000 RPM at all those speeds doesn't really mean anything. If you're going a higher speed, you're going to be using more gas.
Okay, well, let me ask you a question. How fast were you going at 2,000?
Well, it didn't matter whether I was going 70 mile an hour, 50 mile an hour.
Okay.
30 mile an hour.
Then 2,000 is the top
and
end.
And when I'm going flat land without straining, it's 2,000.
Okay. So the transmission set at 2,000 for constant velocity. So the idea is we're supposed to give you better fuel economy. We're supposed to get you there faster. But if you've got a 2,000 cap, no matter what you're doing, going fast, going slow, going uphill, traffic, and all that other kind of stuff, a hard throttle, then all you got is 2,000. So the answer to your question is if you go to 1,800, which I don't think you're capable of doing, you'd probably get better fuel economy. But if you were climbing a mountain at 1,800, then you wouldn't. So what kind of fuel economy are you getting with it?
I'm getting a really steady 25.
And you're complaining?
No, I'm not complaining.
Oh.
It was just a question.
Okay, okay.
Maybe I'm using the same amount of gas at 70 as at 50 and didn't make any
Well, and I'm unable to tell you what you're doing, but I'd be happy with 25 miles per gallon on anything I drove. So, anyway, well, thank you.
Okay.
I've got to move on. Thank you very much. Todd, you're up next.
Hey, Mark, I don't know how an upstanding guy like you has some clown like this Wayne guy on your radio.
I had to actually check him out from his probation officer.
Yeah, thanks, Todd.
And
yeah, you're welcome. No, hey, you kind of... In fairness to the listeners, this guy has forgotten more about parts than most of us will ever know. I know the guy. So you had dabbled a little bit and mentioned the thing about OE parts and parts in OE boxes and the differences versus the parts in the parts store, but you guys had never really talked about it. And I think it's a really interesting topic. And I don't know how much Wayne can go into as far as disclosure, as far as, like we know that Toyota, Denso, they make their own stuff, but there are a lot of guys out there that don't, that just simply rebox parts, and you're paying more for an OE name in a certain color box that really is no different than what you would buy in a parts store. And I think that's a really interesting topic that really we could delve into a bit.
We can. Go ahead.
And if we have the time.
Do you have any secrets? Take him down, Gil. Take him down so he can. Do you have any secrets about Todd you want to tell us? Because he came out and he outed you? Huh?
I've got stories. We could go on forever, but it's probably best.
How many wives does he have?
Right.
What church does he go to?
Well, that's the problem.
Goodness. Oh, that's the problem. Okay. Okay. Nice. All right, go. You had a question, go.
You know, it's a good point because we're, especially from car guys, and I'm talking from the professional installers, in my opinion, for those of us at least my age and Mark's age, brands were prevalent. And I'm not saying there's not value in brands. There certainly is. But the reality is, because a brand's out there doesn't mean they manufactured every part that's inside that box. Okay? They might manufacture a portion of what they have to offer in all parts that are available, and the balance of those are procured out. They're bought from other sources. They have to be. Nobody makes engine management pieces. I'm just saying nobody makes 50,000 part numbers. They've only manufactured a range of them. And the balance of those, they qualify products from being everywhere. And the same thing happens, by the way, and it's a good conversation, from a new car. I bought my car this day. The part I love that worked great on it is the one that I want to buy 2 years from now. I'm going to tell you right now, if you go over to whatever place you go to in a dealership, or I'm not picking on that, but you think you're buying an OE part, inside that box, I'm not saying the quality of the part is wrong, but you may be thinking you're getting the part that came on the car today, and I'm telling you, that's not the way that it works. The manufacturer buys subcomponents or components complete in assembly. They don't have just secret parts sitting there on hand of that same component all the time. And I can go into this in many different levels. I've seen this happen over the years. Water pumps were a good example of that. I've seen a manufacturer in Mexico making just an OE part for OE production only. When people went back to the red, white, and blue box thinking, I'm going to get that exact part, you got a part that was made up in Canada. I'm saying there's nothing wrong with it, but the assumption is that it was the exact same part that day. It doesn't work that way. Brake pads are a great example of that, too. It doesn't happen that way.
You said two things that are important to me. Water pump. You got the housing, and you got the shaft and the seals and the impeller. Piece of cake.
Bearings.
Okay, but all of those are going to be replaced or not replaced, rebuilt, remanufactured, or whatever.
They're new, and everything's new in water.
And they come together because nobody just makes the housing, the bearings, the shaft, and the impeller. They all come together.
If you're in production watching that, they may, in fact, come from different sources. My point to it is the date that car was produced, there was a contract let to XYZ company to make hundreds of thousands of that one part. 2 years from now, that might be the same part in a box because whatever they had overrun went into a box when you went to OE and you went to buy it, mm-hmm. or it may not.
Right.
And that's a really good point that you assume that I'm going to get the exact same thing. It may happen. And I'm not saying there's anything wrong with it. In fact, it doesn't. But point to it is that that's often contracted out from somebody else in the aftermarket realm. They're shopping just the same way to have a replacement part available as anybody else.
Okay. The real good point, though, is what you said was you're never going to, 2 years later, you're not going to be able to buy the part that came on the car. That's something that's virtually impossible, unless, of course, this part lasts 100,000 miles on every car and the dealer has a stock of starters and they're in a box that are 2 years.
The propensity is that. Exactly.
I understand.
Exactly.
The other thing is, too, you could buy the same vehicle 6 months later and it may come from a different source than the part that was on the exact same car that was produced 6 months before, because they make change contracts in the middle of a production
all
run.
The time. That's why there's different part numbers when you go into some place, and there will be a different part number assigned. It didn't just happen. Typically, they've made a revision to it. They've changed supplier to it. That happens all the time.
And we hear that when they say, give us the production date, because October backwards is one, October forwards is another.
That's exactly right.
And so there's two different, and those are two different vendors, and we don't know which one is the best one and which one isn't. But do you have any pictures that we can post on the internet of Todd, maybe drunker than a hoot owl at some kind of a parts get together or something like that?
No, we gotta take pictures of him riding his bike 30 or 40 miles in the heat, because he's one of those guys. While I'm sitting home eating my steak.
His head is baked.
That's child play.
All righty. I got to run, but we got to get to Bob. Bob, you're up next. How can I help you?
Morning, guys. You know, when you order parts from Rock Auto, and they seem like they're really cheap, and then I asked my mechanic about it, and he said, well, you're taking a big chance because Rock Auto buys, like, old inventory like from maybe a dealer or an old parts house or
wrong.
Something.
Wrong.
It could have been sitting around for six or seven years.
Stop. It's not true. He's not telling you the truth. Okay? He's not. When Rock Auto, when you order from Rock Auto, there's a big warehouse in your town I'm not going to identify. Rock Auto sends a PO to that warehouse. That warehouse puts it in a box and sends it to you. That's it. And Rock Auto is a little bitty double-wide trailer in the middle of nowhere, and all they do is buy from other people. The problem on the price is there's a freight charge. So, yes, you can beat Salem's purchase price. Yes, you can. But if you want to send it back, you have to pay the freight to you. You have to pay the freight back, and then you have to pay the freight for the other one. So at the end of the day, you're much better dealing with me than Rock Auto. But anybody can buy their parts, but I'm not going to install a part because if it doesn't work, then I have to prove it's the part and not my installation, and I don't have time for that. So to answer your question, your mechanic is wrong. The part that you're getting from Rock Auto is the same part Salem installs in your car if I do business with that warehouse. But there's a big warehouse in Phoenix that is the Rock Auto big dog.
There's many of them,
okay.
By the way, around the country.
Yeah.
Many of them.
But I said Phoenix.
Correct.
Yeah. But and so the idea of this whole thing is Wayne and I are I'm not going there. We were going to do the same thing as Rock Auto. I just can't think fast enough that you and I could pull that off with some other part of a car. It would be like tires. You're going to buy tires from me, and I'm going to have them shipped to you by Discount Tire. Something like that. So anyway, I'm sorry, Bob, but he's wrong with what he told you. And Wayne's sitting here next to me, and he's shaking his head. He's laughing because we both know that what he told you isn't true. But it's not an inferior part. It's the same. You know what? If he didn't buy it from Rock Auto, it's entirely possible that when he orders from his vendor, it's the same part and the same part number. It's entirely possible.
It could potentially be fulfilled by the same person that Mark has mentioned that he's purchasing from. It's fulfillment. It's a masterful plan. I mean, it really is. But there's always the devil behind the details. It's always that way.
And it's a good idea when Rock Auto came out. But Rock Auto, the problem with it is people bring me the page off the internet. And they say, can you know, this is my cost. And I go, it's cheaper than mine. And they go, well, why do I buy cheaper? Well, you haven't paid the freight yet. And there's other considerations there. But it's a good part.
There's nothing wrong with the concept. I admire it. I really do.
I wish I would have thought of it.
Really? But it's quite amazing for everybody to understand. It's not sitting there ready for a part to fulfill.
And it's not coming from some factory or some double-wide trailer deep in the bowels of Utah. It's just a bunch of people on computers that are ordering parts from people they've developed a relationship all over the United States.
Negotiated.
How many people in Phoenix, how many warehouses in Phoenix are going to be first call for Rock Auto?
There's more than one.
Okay.
Just put it that way. There's more than one.
Okay. All right. So anyway, 602-508-0960, 602. The lines are wide open. So if you'd like to join us, boy, now would be the time. We're at the top of the hour. So I'm going to take a break here in about 30 seconds. Then we're going to have some news, weather, sports, and all that kind of stuff. And then we're going to come back at about 3 after. So if you want to chime in, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. If you're outside the Phoenix metropolitan area, 888-960-9696, 888-960-96. Welcome back, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour, 11 o'clock. Wayne Shack is my guest, and Wayne tracks parts backwards, and who makes what. And, I mean, China, Taiwan, Mexico.
Korea.
And you told me something that I thought was interesting. With China being at the environment we're in right now is kind of not something that everybody wants to stand up and say, okay, my car. But you said, and not in China's case, but in other cases, sometimes the part will be shipped to Mexico, and then it'll be boxed and said, Hecho in Mexico, and then it comes into the United States. But in reality, it came from South America, Australia, or something else.
Well, it could come into Mexico in subcomponents, and I have seen that. I've witnessed it, and I've watched it from some famous brands that are out there. But they can come in subcomponents. And it can be assembled in a way and maybe something added to it and packaged. And with the requirements that we had through the free trade agreement, not all that is necessarily was disclosed properly. So now it's made in Mexico.
Okay. Now, one other quick question. My truck was made in Mexico. Okay. How many parts of my truck came from Mexico and how many parts of my truck that came from all over the world?
In a percentage, I have no idea, but I can tell you it exists all over the place.
Okay, so my
as
truck...
As much as it does here in U.S. or Canada, it's all North America, and those contracts, depending on the... It could be made there, and the vehicle could also be made for the Mexico market, and the reality is the subcomponents are probably, if you're thinking about that, a dash assembly, complete HVAC systems coming in from a multitude of manufacturers, and the fact is it could have come from a multitude of places prior to that in each piece of subcomponent of that.
Okay, I'm going to change my question. How many of my Dodge parts are made at a Dodge factory that makes Dodge parts?
That Dodge factory? There is
yeah.
no such thing.
Well, and see, that's my point. My point is people think OEM is Dodge. But I tell people, because I know you and because you've trained me, your truck is assembled by parts that came from all over the United States, and there's no such thing as a Dodge factory that puts your truck together with all Dodge parts that Dodge
yeah,
made.
That's a good point. The magic plant across the street that made the part that came on the car, it's subcontracted out by the likes of, you know, it could have been Denso's and Bosch and Siemens and Valeo. All those names you see when you're looking under the hood, and there's usually identifiers somewhere on those, you can see them. They all came from somebody else. They're all contractual for components,
okay.
subcomponents, complete assemblies that are coming in, and those components could have been contracted out from whomever when that vehicle was originally made. It's a really good point.
Okay. All right. You told me, now, first of all, I hear all my life that my Ford is USA. My Ford is this. My Ford is that. You told me a couple of years ago that Ford had rotating electrical from Denso, or was it Hitachi, and the other one, the fuel controls, was one.
Well, you could do it. Yeah, right. That's a good point. So rotating electrical could have been contracted, but Denso.
Alternator starters.
Alternator starters could be, it's either going to be one of four. It's going to be Denso, it's going to be Mitsubishi, it's going to be Hitachi, and it's going to be Valeo.
And so when you buy the Ford alternator in the Ford box, it came from one of those four companies.
Absolutely.
Okay.
When it was built on an assembly line.
Right.
Now, if you're buying a new component in a box, brand new from Ford, GM, whatever, mm-hmm. it may very well be the same. Matter of fact, it was a patent on that, so that was their design to begin with. Remanufactured is a different story.
I understand. So, and then you said that had Continental belts and hoses. I'm dealing with something that we talked about 2 years ago.
Or Bando, or Mitsubishi.
Okay. It's a sin for us to sit here and say that the Ford truck has a Mitsubishi rotating electric.
But that's the thing that
possibly has that.
Absolutely. The same with the mass airflow sensor. That was more than likely Hitachi.
Okay.
Or a water pump that was coming out of companies down in, you know, doing OE business in Mexico or Canada or it could be in China.
Okay.
You know, Chevy Cobalt has a control arms that were made in China, as an example.
Okay.
I'm just saying, throwing it out there, but that's the way that it is. That's a fact.
But people just think that their car is made with all Dodge and Chevy and Toyota and Honda parts. People think that they want the part that came off the car. We already discussed that anyway. I want to say something. Todd R. That's
correct.
Who we talked to.
Correct.
Okay. He doesn't know this, but there was a flushing of one of my vendors, and Todd was part of that. He was him, and I had 88 years of experience with this. The people that were the guys that beat the floor, 88 years experience with three of them.
Correct.
We went back a long time. All of a sudden, this big company that I predominantly dealt with for the last, 10 years, this company flushed out a whole bunch of old guys and sent them to a rest home. That's my words. So they flushed these guys out. Todd was one of them. And I moved all my business. Now they're calling me going, can we talk? And the answer is, no, we're not talking. You've told me everything I need to know about you. I'm not talking. I'm not interested in talking. I can buy my parts wherever I want to. The company I moved to had been hustling me for 5-10 years. And here's the deal. I don't have any friends left in Company A. None. I don't know anybody there. The kid that came in to talk to me, my son said, Archie, it's like Archie Bunker and Mike Stivic. He says, you're Archie Bunker and this kid is going to be Mike Stivic and the two of you aren't going to get together. And he has a bun. And he says, so if he brings a cowboy hat. So the other guy I went to, Ronnie Schumann and I went to high school together in 1970s, early 70s. So I have a relationship with them and he's our salesman. So we move, but that's just something. Todd, I know that you were part of when they flushed the toilet. I know that you were a good part of the company. I know that your three compadres were a good part of the company. But I get to vote, and I vote with my parts purchases, and I move to someone else. And you know, Wayne, that the parts I bought at A and the parts I bought at B are pretty much the same parts.
You know, and it's a good point mentioning that, too, because for everybody to understand, too, within parts, automotive parts, it's a very big industry, and you know, it's an essential service. Mm-hmm. During all the COVID piece, it's an essential service. We were out there constantly servicing and doing what we do. It's a very, very big industry. As big as it is, it's still very small, and it goes down to something like this on a shop level, sitting in a marketplace who does a very phenomenal job of what they do, but they depend on people every day to make certain things happen. And there are other people, other folks, and I'm just going to throw Wall Street-driven companies behind there that, no offense, but the fact of the matter is, what used to be very much personable service, we've kind of gone away from that, but we still, to this day, people who own level one shop facilities still depend on people to do the right things. And other people who have investments in it feel that, well, we can just get away and we can run it the way we need to run it and run it for less. It doesn't work that way. And by the way, speaking of being small, it's amazing on a global level when you go into, and I've been into hundreds and hundreds of manufacturers globally, believe me, that circle is very small, even though the volume is massive. Mm-hmm. We're talking billions and billions of dollars. It's much smaller. It's very simple for me to go to write to a source and have a conversation with the manufacturer, and I can come back and have a conversation with Mark Salem.
I understand. One of the things that we talk about, or I talked about in my letter of resignation to Parts Store A, was these old guys were the glue that held us together.
That happens in so many companies. My God, I guarantee people are listening today, whether what industry they're in, that has happened.
Yep. And the three guys, well, actually four. The three sales guys and Todd, who was over, those guys were the glue. Now, I didn't ask them to do things for me. I didn't ask them for free parts. I paid my bill on time. I was a good customer. I just think I'm going to vote with my parts dollars, and I'm going to say to you, you're not the kind of company I want to deal with because you just sent three guys home. And, of course, it's not that, but they won't tell me what it is. They also told me they were going to have a retirement party, and my response to them was, I must have missed the invite. I must have missed the invite because there's never been a retirement party. And if they did, they probably wouldn't go anyway. So you can tell my panties are kind of wadded up about this, but let me tell you something good. Kurtz Automotive's at I-17 in Bell. He's a good guy. You know that. And Kurtz, yep. Kurtz has been a friend of mine for a very long time. He opened his doors in 1987. He works on domestic import gas and diesel. He has ASC certified technicians. He's at I-17 and Bell in the northeast corner. I tell this story time and time again. A lady is told by three different shops she needs an engine. The oil light's on. It's red. She calls me. I say, I'm way south. I'm going to send you to Kurtz. He's right around the corner. Kurt put an oil pressure switch in it, and that was it. He said, I was almost embarrassed to charge her because of the grief she had already gone through. So I waited for a while. She called me back as I asked her to report. She says, fixed. Everything's fine. I don't need an engine. The light's off. There's no clatter. There's no side. Nothing. Three shops. Motor.
2 minutes.
That's basic fundamental stuff. That's all there is to it. It's just basic fundamental stuff. Another place that's a good shop in town that I really do think deserves to be on the list is Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing. He's in Mesa. He comes from a family, and so does his wife, their fathers and uncles pumped gas in the 50s and the 60s in Mesa.
Family business.
These kids started picking up cigarette butts in the parking lot, just like my kids did. So they've been around like, but Brian and his wife are just the salt of the earth. They're on Main Street just east of Stickby, and Brian and Thelma both have been around a long time. So it's the only shop in Mesa that I can recommend, and the reason why it's the only shop is others have applied, but there's a certain level of expertise that I want. And sometimes they haven't been in business for 5 years. Sometimes their reviews are a little bit ugly. Sometimes they're behind in their parts bill, and sometimes they can't give me the certificates of insurance that I need to have. So I'm doing my best to protect people, and sometimes I don't get what I always want. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open. If you want to talk about a parts discussion, like I was told that my Toyota was built in a Toyota factory, we can talk about some of the specific parts that we know for sure weren't built in any kind of a factory that had Toyota on the outside. The only thing Toyota does, to recap what we talked about, is Toyota takes all these parts from all over the world and puts a car together. Right?
True. Absolutely.
Okay. So 602-508-0960. We'll be back in a few minutes. Well, of course, every Saturday we're here talking about car and car repair. My guest is Wayne Shack. Wayne and I have been friends for a long time, and I know that Wayne knows more about automotive parts than any 10 guys that I know. And the reason why is because Wayne follows the part to where it's built, and he knows how many parts and stuff like that. Let me get some business out of the way, and then I'm going to ask you a question that I just thought of. Strictly Diesel Service and Repair is a Better Business Bureau A-plus shop. Nate is the owner of Strictly Diesel Service and Repair. He's a really big guy. His hands are like tennis rackets. There'll be no question when he's on the other side of the calendar from you. He's like 9 feet tall. But he's a good guy. He knows the foreign and domestic light diesel lines. He's really good, and I must admit, because it's the truth, there are times that my shop can't figure out a diesel. And inevitably, I can call Nate, and he'll help us. Obviously, junk in and junk out, so I have to give him the symptoms and answer his questions, and that has to be correct for him to get close. But when you're up in North Phoenix, you can't do better than Strictly Diesel at I-17 and Pinnacle Peak Road. Okay, Mr. Shack.
Yes, sir.
Oxygen sensors are something we deal with every day of our life. And for those of you out there, the oxygen sensor tells the computer if there's a lot of gas coming out of the exhaust or a little bit of gas. So otherwise, is the engine running rich or lean? And the oxygen sensor tells the computer so it can shut the faucet off and it can turn on the catalytic converter, blah, blah, blah. There's at least 20 boxes that we have bought oxygen sensors in. So is there 20 companies?
And by the way, air fuel ratio sensors fall into that as category as well. So it's pretty much the same thing. So the fact of the matter is, no. There's boxes. They're all over the place.
Right.
But the reality is behind it,
okay,
there's really only three manufacturers at an OE level globally. That's it.
Worldwide.
Worldwide.
There's three companies.
90-some percent,
okay,
is three companies.
So if no matter what box it comes in, I have a 99% certainty that it's going to come. Now, wait a minute. Where are these companies? We're going to eliminate this idea of foreign is bad. Where are these three companies located? Just countries.
Japan.
Okay.
Could be Korea. It's relative to ceramics.
Okay.
Because that's what it's all about.
Ceramics.
It's all the, yeah, it's, and you know, it's, I don't tell you, you want to tell you who the manufacturers are? They're,
go.
Denso, Bosch is another one in NTK.
Okay, NGK. So NGK, that's a spark plug that most import guys would recognize, a ceramic one. Then you've got Denso, that's a company I like. Larry was the big cheese for Denso. What was his title?
He was, at the time, he was a marketing director.
Okay. I loved him. He would answer every question and did
it. Since retired, but.
Yep.
He made it out.
Yep. And then, so that was Bosch, Denso, and NGK.
That's it.
Now, Bosch guys have always been a little snooty. You know what I'm saying? They've just always been, just sit there and be quiet. They've always been just a little better than my perception. Mark Salem's perception is they're just a little better than everybody else, and the question you ask is stupid. So I'll stay away from them just as a a installer that's going to vote with his dollars. So just sit there and shut up, because I know you're going to get in trouble. So you sit there and shut up. I'm also going to talk about automatic transmission exchange that's been around in Phoenix since 1968. Phil and his guys are really good at transmission diagnostics. So they're on 40th Street in Washington. If you drive up and down Washington, they're on the north side of the road. They've been there for a very long time. So if you've been working downtown Phoenix from the East Valley, then if you drove down Washington, you've passed their shop many, many times. So automatic transmission exchange. Do you want to take it in a different direction, Mr. Shack?
Well, I mean, we still stuck on the one point we were talking about in the oxygen sensor piece, because to your point, you're going back into OE, you're buying a part inside of a bag. That's fine. It could have been, because oxygen sensors, they're very much brand one, brand two, brand three, and you know yourself, an oxygen sensor is nothing but a switch.
That's
on,
right.
Off, on, off. That's yep. all it does. At yep. a certain level, on, off. So there's always a passion between people. I always had a huge amount of respect for the installers, but I don't want this brand, I want that mm-hmm. brand. And the reality is, they all know how each other's work. The most amazing thing of this, there is another company that sits in the U.S. that actually takes all three brands, and each one of them, brand A, brand B, brand C, cannot buy from each other, but they buy through one person, and that person can lengthen or shorten those O2 sensors as well. They have the capabilities. So even though you're buying a brand, the reality is you might have the other brand's element inside the box that's been lengthened or extended. And that particular manufacturer also has their own brand, which is comprised of one of those three.
Now, why can't they buy from A? Can't buy from B? B? Why?
It's amazing to think of that, right?
Yeah.
So, air fuel ratio sensor is a good point on that, because those are in fact a patented issue. So they don't want each other's technology, and they can't buy. They okay. cannot go over and said one guy is not going to go over, because they're contractually they're bidding for OE contracts all the time, so they're competing on that level.
Okay.
Well, they certainly don't have a warm and fuzzy relationship. It doesn't work that way.
Okay, all right. When we go to APEX, which is the largest automotive show in the United States.
By the way, just so you know, it's also with the conjunction with SEMA. So everybody, because a lot of people out there heard SEMA, but APEX is the so-called aftermarket, the parts side of it, the repair parts side
right.
of SEMA, and the other side, the other building, if you will.
Yeah, and SEMA is kind of hot rod stuff, fancy right. stuff, the chrome and the tires, accessories yeah. and stuff. So APEX, these three guys, if they're at APEX, are they friends? Do they shake one of those hands?
Sure they do. They know each other.
Okay.
They know each other, but they know each other in so much that they have offices in the U.S. and they know each other.
Okay. But I mean, they're not pooping on one another on a regular basis. They're not saying that Wayne Shack's an idiot or anything like that at all.
But if we were going to go buy one or the other, we pit one against each other and they negotiate deals, and that's how we...
Do you do that?
Absolutely.
You negotiate deals?
Yeah, absolutely. I do it every single day.
Can you negotiate my parts, Bill?
Sure, I could. For the right amount of money, anything is possible.
We got someone on the phone. Who's that? Who might that be?
That would be Dan.
Dan, good morning.
Yeah, Mark, I have a question about air filters and cabin filters. I should look for the best price and not the brand.
Wayne.
Boy, that's a really good question. Look at the side of the box and look at the country of origin. And, you know, obviously we brand on this, but, and there's always, every brand is going to do everything they can to obviously put something magic dust or cleaner and whatever inside of it. You're right. The fact is, you would be surprised that filter manufacturers, they're not as many as you think. In China, I probably have visited, I think, probably 10 of them. It's been consolidated down. Korea, there's a couple. And you know what? They're all really using the same media anyway. I got to be honest with you. They really are. There's not some separate paper manufacturer. Every one of these guys, there's only two paper manufacturers in the world that can really do this stuff. I'm not saying the rating to it is better
right.
one way or the other, but I'm just saying we're passionate about a brand on that. The most important thing is change it. I can't
say that enough. Find a good deal, like on an air filter or cabin filter, like 2-for-1 or half price, 50%, I should snatch that.
Absolutely.
Up. That's
Absolutely.
What I do, because I like to keep it on hand.
It's Some people like the ones with the scented stuff. If you want to pay more for it, God bless you. But the reality is you've done the right thing.
1 minute.
Change it.
I want to tell you something real quick.
Well, thanks a lot.
Okay, thank you, Dan. We sell the scented ones.
That's good.
We spray it ourselves.
I think that's a smart idea, right?
I'm kidding.
There's guys that do that around the country.
I know that. And here's the hard part is, what smell do you give them? Do you give them cherry? You give them banana? Do you give them Lysol?
Something neutral.
Okay, all right.
You try, but even
ozone,
that'll still.
Or, what's that called now?
Febreze, whatever, just a regular scent. Some people may be offended by that, but, you know, the majority of them like it.
And, of course, your engine on air filters doesn't care whether it smells like mashed potatoes and gravies.
Cleaned or replaced.
Okay, so the cabin filter, folks, is the filter inside your car that filters the air that comes out of the vents and blows in your face. 602-508-0960, that's the phone number to get on and call us, 602-508-0960. Mark Salem and Wayne Check here at your service. Any question will be accepted. Answered, completely different story.
All about
34 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. My name's Mark Salem. Sitting next to me is Wayne Check. Wayne Check knows about parts, their origination, where they're made, how many people make them in the whole world. He has 7 jillion travel miles that he won't give me anything to fly to Tucson, but he's still a good guy, and we've known one another for many years. You want to comment on that?
Just a few.
Just a few is right. Okay, let me talk real quick about Blackwell Automotive, 40th Street in Glendale. Tom and I are cut from the same cloth. We're pretty opinionated. I'm proud to say both of us will raise our hand and say we know how to say I was wrong, not to our wives, but to customers and stuff like that. The idea is he's a good guy, and he's really especially talented on old cars, hot rods, but he can do anything else. So if you're, and I don't have anybody in that Northeast Scottsdale venue. Tom is as close as I can get, and I know he's a good guy, and I know he'll take good care of you. So that's Tom Blackwell, Blackwell Automotive, 40th Street in Glendale. Okay, I'm going to take a call, and then I have a really tough question for you. So you're gonna want it at the end of the show. Scott, you're up first. What's up?
Hey, Mark. Good morning.
Good morning.
I don't know if you remember me. I was on your show about 2 years ago. I'm the helicopter guy.
This guy builds helicopter parts. And they build them within 1/100th of a human hair. And he won't even give me a ride in a helicopter.
Oh, man, I'd love
to. I'll terrify you someday, don't worry.
I'm kidding.
This subject, okay, I came on your show to talk about really how parts got qualified. And the guy brings a box in and said, hey, this is a better part than what you're buying now. So with that in mind, how we kind of started that off, I'm really interested in Wayne's comments and background of, how do you get around qualifying a part? How do you get around proprietary issues? I mean, when we build a aviation part, we go through a bunch of extensive testing and material analysis and fit up and test and all this stuff. Well, not to say aviation's better than automotive, but certainly a brake module, if it was, hey, this one will work in this application aftermarket, and it doesn't, you can certainly have a catastrophic event.
No, there's no question about it. Absolutely. I totally understand that. And I will tell you right now that if you pick any category globally, when you're going, either somebody has qualified that part on from the OE standpoint and it's being manufactured by a manufacturer and they already are building that part, or there's reverse engineering goes on. And there it is. That's the truth. That's a fact of life. Whether we like it or not, it was reverse engineered. Question is, in any manufacturer out there today, are they certified, and is a certification bought, as they usually are in China? And believe me, you know when you're in companies. You also have to qualify bill of material. Where is it coming from? There's a lot of steps that go through in picking somebody just because you went in there and one part was in U.S. dollars, $1 cheaper than the others. Now, there's certain categories, it probably doesn't make a lot of difference. You know, I'm talking, for example, on a motor mount, and that's always a touchy subject, but it's different on iron and a rotor. And, you know, manufacturers know, they know, especially now with the metallurgy, it has to reach a certain, qualify to reach a certain level and a certain composition. They know that. And they've got to meet the exact same requirements as the part was purchased. It's reverse engineered. And you're exactly right. But also considering the fact that you can't have a part for sale without liability behind it. It's a huge portion of this. Just buying a part is not as simple as going and looking at it and saying this guy looks better than that guy or that person or the dinner was better that I had the night before. You have to spend a lot of time inside of it, and there's other levels of qualification, especially from an engineering standpoint. And an engineer I'm not, but there are another set of levels that get scrutinized before that part is just purchased.
So what I hear you saying is there's windows that with respect to the quality of the part and the thickness and the so forth of the iron and stuff. That middle, that opening is well within industry standards.
Correct. Okay. That is correct.
But we're not flying helicopters.
So what I'm hearing, Mark and Wayne, is that just because you know company ABC builds this alternator and you go to them and say, I know you're building this for the OE. I want you to build some for me. Contractually, they may say, well, no, we're already locked in with their design. We just can't build this for you. You can't have an overrun. We're contracted with an OE.
It happens.
It may be proprietary.
Yeah, you're right. It happens. You're 100% correct. It does happen in the industry. And that's the aftermarket typically will react to that and go elsewhere and have it produced, if possible. And there's times when you just simply can't. You can't get around it. It does happen.
See, because where we had a problem in our industry years and years ago is we had OE parts for helicopters, okay? You got to buy the parts from, and it, just like in automotive, they don't build it. They put the thing together. They have the parts built all over the world, different vendors. But what you'd run into is where I build under what was called PMA, Parts Manufacturing Approval. So I'm kind of like the NAPA of helicopter hydraulics. I build parts that are approved to go on certain aircraft that are FAA approved. But what we'd have in the early days was, oh, those PMA parts, those are ones they ran extra or didn't quite qualify. Those went out the back door. So it was always interesting to me in Mark's business where someone would say, hey, this is a better suspension part. This is a better water pump. That how they got there, where it came from, to that it didn't cause more problems than it cured.
And you bring up a good point, but to your point, Wayne, I don't feel comfortable buying the cheapest part I can. I want to be in the bottom quarter, or I want to be in the bottom third. I don't want to be in the bottom quarter. I want to be above that. Do I need to be afraid of the bottom?
You know what? Especially in the U.S., as we're all out there, whomever it may be, whether it's through the retail channel, online, you still... There's a qualification process that goes on in the background. You take a tremendous amount of risk selling something you just went off and had something hammered out and produced. There are qualification steps that happen behind the scenes all the time. There's liability that's involved. There's liability certificates that have to be applied. You can't do it that way. Now, considering the fact that you might have a switch that could have a percentage of recycled plastic versus new, it's probably less relevant. It's not a big deal where it's at. A brake rotor has to be manufactured a certain way. There's a tremendous amount of liability behind that.
And you can see, now, when we talk about the window of acceptability, that's the qualification. It has to fit, on a 1 to 10 scale, it has to fit between a 4 and a 6.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah.
So anybody with a 4, anybody with a 5 or a 6 is going to be okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, Scott, I tease you about the helicopter rides and all that kind of stuff because you're really the only guy that I know that knows anything about helicopters. But if I ever buy one, I'm going to have you help me.
If I ever hear you're shopping around for helicopter parts, we're going to have an issue. Okay.
Well, and that's okay. But if you run across a really cheap helicopter for a couple hundred dollars, let me know.
You're into that low pricing problem again.
Then you can ask about reman versus rebuilt versus remanufactured,
no,
right?
No. And then I'll just get one of those parachutes that you have. And so when all hell breaks loose, you open up the door, bail out, and hope that the helicopter doesn't.
Hope it's not spinning around.
Yeah, it's real tough to go through the rotor system.
Right. All righty. Thank you very much, Scott. This is interesting to me because actually you and I have been friends for many years, but I'm getting stuff from you that I've never got. We have always dealt with the brand that our vendor picked, and sometimes it's the less expensive, sometimes it's not. The comfort zone is this. They're going to back me up on it.
Absolutely.
They're going to back me up on it. So I, from the point of view of a shop owner, I'm going to use usually what they have, figuring that if they buy something crappy and I have to do a bunch of warranty, that they're going to put me back whole.
Correct.
And that would be good. But when you start talking about Denso and all those other kind of guys that you know, Larry, you know this guy, there's a lot of comfort for me. But I'm not going to go out there and start telling other shop owners what they're supposed to look for because that's going to create chaos. So knowing you and having those pictures of you with that one waitress in Mexico, that makes it easy for me.
Does it really?
Yeah.
So I'll get the other ones out then, too, okay? We'll put the collage together.
Yeah, 602-508-0960. The lines are open, and we got another 27 minutes of show. Minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock, our show has been focused on parts, where they came from, what box they're in, so forth and so on. But Wayne Chack is sitting here next to me, and he knows more about parts than anybody I know, and he's really respected by all the guys I know that sell parts because they kind of follow what Wayne says. The bottom line, I think the end of the day, if I can paraphrase, there are certain qualifications that certain ranges of acceptability for automotive parts. So on a 1 to 10 scale, the range might be 4 to 6. Everybody better be in the 4 to 6. You can't be 7. You can't be outside the sweet spot.
Well, there's still certain certifications that every manufacturer globally, no matter where they're at, a TS-16949 is always a good one to look for because that's a process that happens whether I'm here or somewhere else. Okay. There is a flowed process and a bill of material and a qualified bill of material that's followed. If the companies are worth their weight, whomever it is manufacturing, the bottom line I don't want to simplify it, but a machine that could be running here could be plugged in and run someplace else so long as the process is the same and the bill of material is the same.
The material coming in to make the
Absolutely.
Part. Okay, gotcha.
You know, it's not as if this guy went shopping for something different than that guy. Better companies, and you can, they've got to be qualified at it. Can you buy a certification? It happens all the time in certain countries. It does. Okay. But when you're researching that, you have a way to go through and find out. Are they buying from the same? You can check source materials. You can see whether or not they're manufacturing their own tooling fixing and repairing and all these things that go on behind it. You have a sense when you walk into a manufacturer of something what level they're at. That's just something I've done over the years.
Okay. So, yeah. Last night we all had dinner together, your wife, my wife, and me, the four of us.
Yeah, and you got in trouble too, didn't you?
I always get in trouble. Mm-hmm. Who cares? But I'm about to get you in trouble. Okay. You were talking about travel to all these countries. And what I take from you is that while a lot of people in the automotive industry want nothing to do with China, what I hear you saying is that's not a good idea. It's not something that you subscribe to, nor you're going to give Mark Salem your best advice, is don't care, don't worry about the box that has China on it.
Well, look, separate out for the politics, and that could be a complete different segment, and I'm not advocating that China, it could be okay. Vietnam, it could be wherever. The fact of the matter is, certain countries, and they just happened to be one where we went to, first of all, because things got opened up and we had labor that was inexpensive. It's changed tremendously. We've had certain product categories that went away, and they went away for a lot of reasons. It wasn't just because of cheap labor, because first of all, you couldn't cast a rotor here, or a brake rotor as an example, or manufacture brake pads back when they had asbestos. That's all changed now. But those types of what used to be dirty type of jobs went elsewhere. It just so happens they've gotten really good at it. And it's hard to figure out tomorrow how you pick something up like that and move it away elsewhere. So a brake rotor, or when we, years ago with a radiator, mm-hmm. Now they're all plastic and the aluminum composition, and there are certain ways that radiators have to be made in order to be qualified and good product. Those have already been vetted out and they've become acceptable to us. You know, they work and it works fine and we do that. It doesn't mean that I don't want it to be made somewhere else. And could it be made and is it made? Yes, it is. But there's reasons why they're there. Now, politically, the climate's changing and many of those great manufacturers who do what they do are looking elsewhere and moving off into other countries in Southeast Asia and India or wherever. That's the way it's going to be.
Okay. Last night you were, it was all I could do to eat my dinner after you told me and my wife and your wife some of the food you've eaten in other countries. Let's start with the legs. What animal owned the legs that you ate?
Are you talking about the chicken feet?
Is that what it is, chicken feet?
What do you think Tyson does with all those feet?
I don't know.
Well, they get packaged and frozen and they get shipped overseas. They
People eat the feet.
Absolutely.
Of chickens.
Snack food. Yeah, absolutely.
Is it good?
There's not much there. It's, you know, you say you eat a bucket of chicken feet, you're gonna still be wanting for something else. But I will tell you though, you do learn there's a tremendous amount of collagen in that. And
okay.
Women eat that stuff all the time because of collagen. I don't know. You know, it's funny. My wife gets injections in her knees now because we're at that age and
yeah.
because of a knee problem, and it's chicken. So,
okay. So why don't you just buy her a box of chicken
feet? Well, that's what
feet.
I keep saying. It seems like a heck of a lot less expensive. She has eaten them before, and we've done that. But that one's an easy one.
All right. Give me two others that should upset the people that are listening.
Duck tongue.
Duck tongue.
The tongue of the duck.
You mean Donald Duck's tongue?
Yeah, absolutely.
And what does that taste like?
You know, it's kind of like somewhat like us sitting around eating beef jerky.
Okay.
You know, it takes a heck of a lot of duck, but you know what? As long as the beer's cold, they really do taste very, they're really good.
So the beer helps it become palatable.
No, there's nothing to do with it. It's actually, it's excellent. I love it.
Okay.
Pigeon's another thing. We don't touch over here, but I'm telling you, pigeon is excellent.
You're just grossing everybody out that I know.
You know what? I didn't even get into the turtle. It was upside down in the bowl of the soup with the toenails and everything, but
tell that story because both wives got up out of the table and they went to the bathroom.
They had to get up and leave.
What? There's a turtle and you turn them upside down.
Well, they made the broth ahead of time or whatever they did, cook the turtle with it, but the turtle was just completely upside down and the shell will come apart once it's there, but it's in your bowl and you eat the soup and you get your chopsticks and pull off the legs and suck down
So were you a hamburger and steak American guy when you start visiting these other countries and then all of a sudden you've adopted these foods? Who's the one that got you to eat the turtle and the toenails of the turtle?
You know, my theory is if you boil it or fry it and it's cooked through,
yeah,
I'll probably eat it.
Okay.
I draw the line on bugs.
Okay.
I just don't do that. And you don't want to offend anybody, you know, so it's all about that because you're visiting somebody and you're trying to be as nice as you can, but you don't have to do that.
All right. I want to go with you if I can someday, but I'm going to tell you right now, if there ain't a McDonald's close.
No, they're all over the place. KFC and McDonald's everywhere. So you can.
Seriously?
Absolutely. KFC's everywhere.
All right. Give me some countries. Taiwan?
Yeah.
China?
Yep.
Vietnam?
Yep.
Give me some more.
Korea? Yep. Absolutely.
McDonald's everywhere.
Everywhere.
Kentucky Fried Chicken. Yep.
And, absolutely.
And Kentucky Fried Chicken doesn't mean the chicken feet.
They have them on there. You know, they do.
That is something. I would have to starve to death. That would be a good way to lose weight is to go with you to one of these places and you only eat duck tongue and the feet of a turtle. I'm going to lose a lot of weight because I'm not going with you.
You would learn how to do it. The beer is cold. So if you know how to ask for that, by the way, you need to learn a few words and language so you get a cold beer. So
okay. It's so milk, Kool-Aid, soda pop, a vodka tonic, that's all available.
I wouldn't touch the milk.
Okay.
I don't think they have no clue what Kool-Aid is. You're going to get something with soy and some sort of beans on the bottom of it or whatever that they eat all the time. It kind of grosses me out, but not something like that.
What grosses you out?
There's something they drink, and I don't even know what goji or whatever the heck it is. They drink it in Taiwan, too. It tastes a little bit sweet. It's kind of like a milk, but in the bottom of it's almost like a tapioca bean or something that's in it that sucks up inside the straw. Whatever it is. I know they do it over here, too.
Okay.
It just puts me off.
Okay.
But I can eat the turtle, but I'm not going to drink that.
Well, when they talk about a worldwide guy, they talk about you. Is anything manufactured in the car repair? I'm going to throw a couple countries, yes or no. Australia?
Not to my knowledge.
South America?
Absolutely there is.
Okay.
You know, there's brake rotors being made down there, absolutely.
Okay, all right. You already covered the Middle East, Spain, France, Germany.
Sure there are.
Okay.
Absolutely.
These are people that make original equipment parts to the best standards that could be boxed in, let's just pretend, just for 5 to 10 different branded boxes. Would that be fair to say?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. All right. Well, I've learned a lot from you today. I entertain customers that want, you know, the same starter that they came off their car, and I'm not quite sure I'm going to fight that battle. I think what I'm going to do is buy it from the manufacturer and just say to them, I'm not going to get involved in, hey, you got to talk to Wayne Shack. I have his cell phone number. I'm just going to say, I get it. But there was a case not too long ago that I talked to you about, and that was there was a dealer that said that if you didn't buy their radiator, then your warranty wouldn't fly.
Absolutely incorrect.
Okay, now, that's the question. It's, where are all the radiators made?
Virtually, I would say the vast majority of radiators are either made in China or India.
Okay, and so chances of the Dodge radiator, can you tell me where the Dodge radiator is made?
I can tell you probably more the propensity of what manufacturer made it.
Fair enough.
And more than likely on that one, it was probably Valeo. Okay. And Valeo has interest in all globally. They manufacture product globally.
Heater cores, radiators, that kind of stuff.
Same thing.
Now, Valeo, where's their home headquarters?
France.
Okay, okay. Yeah. So it's a Valeo radiator, and if I buy a radiator, I can buy it with 10 different boxes and the Dodge, and it's all going to be the same radiator.
It should be, unless somebody interchanged something incorrectly.
Okay. Well, we bought both of them, because this was a legal case I was involved in. And we bought both of them, and the only difference between the two was one port, one coolant port. And it came with a plug for if you didn't need it.
Certainly,
or you needed it.
Because they just consolidated a part number. It happens all the time.
But there, when you buy a, here's the bottom line. When you buy a Dodge, Chevy, Ford, Chrysler, Toyota, Honda, when you buy that in that box, means nothing with respect to that's not made in a Honda factory or a Toyota factory or a Dodge factory.
Correct.
They're buying every piece of your car from somebody who makes it, and chances are there's not a lot of places in the United States that are making those parts.
2 minutes.
It's true. And chances are the day that part was made, as it came in the sub-assembly, That could have been contracted through one portion of one facility they may have had. And then on the aftermarket side, meaning aftermarket, when you went and bought the replacement from them, more than likely it came from someplace else.
Okay.
Do they know how it's supposed to function? Sure they do. But so does everybody else.
Okay. That makes a difference. Anyway, if you have more questions, mark at marksalem.com. I'll forward them to Wayne. I'm not going to give you his, and then he'll kind of answer me back up. So Mark at MarkSalem.com. Thank you for spending your Saturday with me. Awesome. We'll do this again, and it's going to create a lot of, I don't believe this, or I don't want to talk about this, and that's okay.
Yep.
That's okay, because that's how everybody learns, is they get to throw stuff on the board, and hopefully it sticks. All right, Mark at MarkSalem.com. I'll see you next Saturday right here on 960 at 10 o'clock, and we'll have fun again.